שלום ליהודים, שלום לבני נוח, שלום לגויים. It's the evening of the sixth day, Vav Betamuz Parashas Balach, Tavshinayin Dallas, the evening of the fifth day, Thursday, 3 July 2014, webcasting from the land of guilt, the crucible of civilization. I've heard or read, I forget which, that none other than Adolf Hitler is believed to have said that conscience is a Jewish invention, which makes sense to me. His fellow Austrian, Sigmund Freud, might agree. For sure, Freud wrote a book called Civilization and Its Discontents, in which he philosophized on the impossibility of civilization without the restraint of conscience. This is how I understand the story of the flood. The Torah teaches that the earth was full of Hamas. That's when Hashem decided to end it. That's the sin the world was guilty of. He decided to, so to speak, scrap the experiment of man and start all over. Wipe out all living things on land and in the sky. Birds live on land. Only the fish in the sea would survive. Though of all his human creatures, he did find one man and his family to keep alive and use to reproduce the species. In the antediluvian world, before the flood, man had no restraints on his appetites and reflexes. He was all, in a Freudian sense, id, the it of the human animal that desires and hungers and strives to get what it wants, regardless of other people and their needs. In a nutshell, humanity before the flood was a breed of conscienceless psychopaths who killed in cold blood because another person was blocking their appetite for something, for anything. Hamas comes from the word ham, which means hot, as in hot-headed, hot-blooded, I suppose in modern terms, impulse-driven. The word appears in the five books numerous times and is translated differently each time. For example, while the Christian King James translation uses the word violence in the first verses before the flood, the modern Jewish art scroll translates Hamas as robbery. But then, in chapter 16, verse 5, art scroll uses outrage, for the same word, when the matriarch Sarah bitterly answers her husband Avraham about her struggle with her now pregnant and haughty serving girl. And then, towards the end of the five books, chapter 49, verse 5, Yaakov is on his deathbed, speaking his last to his sons, and he speaks of Shimon and Levi for their killing of all those men in Shechem after the rape of their sister, and calls them vessels of Hamas, or instruments of Hamas. And at that point, Artscroll uses the term stolen craft, and the King James uses cruelty. So for yours truly, it conjures up conscienceless aggression, unrestrained aggression, and that is aggression without guilt. Guilt is what was being flung around the Holy Land today. In addition to more flying rocks and bottles hurled by hot-blooded Hamites in Jerusalem at Israeli police, hundreds of them, even thousands, in different locations, giving vent to their indignation at the injustice of one of their own, reportedly kidnapped and murdered by Al Yehud. You know, just like what happened to those yeshiva boys. That's why they rioted yesterday when the news of the killing of the 70-year-old Ishmaelite, one Mohammed Abu Khadir, broke, and whose burnt body was found in the Jerusalem forest. And I await the final investigation and will not be surprised if this is another Mohammed Adura caper. With the difference being that the death of this boy is real. It's not in question, as it was with Mohammed Adura. Last night, Arut Sheva reported on its website about a TV Channel 2 report by veteran journalist and no right-wing nut Moshe Nussbaum, who reported that the victim's parents gave the police very different and contradictory versions of events. The mother was sure that Al Yehud had done the deed. The father, by contrast, said no, it was their own fellow Arabians. And even more revealing, Nussbaum reported that the police had received a call regarding a failed kidnapping attempt on their younger son the day before, on Tuesday. And if so, this does not sound like a random kidnapping, as our boys were randomly sacrificed to the god of Arab barbarism. If this Arutsheva report is valid, Nussbaum's report substantiated, all the violence here for the 2 days of riots by these herds of Ishmael clones, these wild asses of teenagers, who wrecked seriously several light rail stations in their own neighborhoods, was a big mistake. Even more interesting could be the reactions of all the anti-Jews in Israel, Jewish and anti-Jewish alike, and around the world, who have used this latest homicide to bash and bash and bash Israel's nationalist religious community, the backbone of the Israeli right these days. Everybody and his brother took the opportunity to bash Israel for this monstrous injustice, this revenge killing, of doing to a random Ishmaelite what was done to our three Israelite victims. What a cascade of bashing was spoken, with no respect for the unfinished investigation by the police into the killing. For these critics, it's a done deal that not only was the actual murderer or murderers Jews, but the entirety of Israel's right wing and religious community is guilty. It's a collective guilt for this community incited the murderers to take revenge. Jerusalem City Councilman Meir Margalit of the Post-Zionist, Post-Jewish Meretz Party ignored the initial police announcement that this could have been a personal or criminal intra-Arabian act. Nothing can be ruled out yet. To this, Margalit said, "There is no question as to the motivation. It's clear that it's revenge and terrorist action carried out by the right wing." Even the PA, led by that now very nice Dr. Abbas, said the Israelis should, quote, "take immediate measures against the racism and murderous actions carried out by settler gangs." And Abbas personally demanded that Netanyahu condemn the killing of the Arab teenager the same way we condemned the abduction and killing of the three settlers, close quote. And then, of course, in more refined tones from Washington, Secretary of State John Forbes Kerry just had to pick up the phone and call Prime Minister Netanyahu and issue his own statement that, quote, "Washington condemns in the strongest possible terms the despicable and senseless abduction and murder of Abu Khadir. It is sickening to think of an innocent 17-year-old boy snatched off the streets, his life stolen from him and his family. And there are no words to convey adequately our condolences to the Palestinian people." And I doubt Kerry's statements on the kidnapping and murder of our boys approach this level of emotion, and I doubt before Abbas spoke in Saudi Arabia, Kerry went public with any such demand for a condemnation from him. In the UK as well, both PM David Cameron and Foreign Secretary William Hague said they were appalled by the murder. Cameron spoke of the loss of four boys this week, and again without confirmation that number four was like the first three. In the Knesset, the monomaniacal leftist hysteric M.K. Zahava Galon, head of the Meretz Party, blamed right-wing cabinet ministers for inciting and calling for revenge without differentiating between innocent people and those who are responsible for the terrible kidnapping murder of the three Israelis, close quote. And never mind that I never heard calls for revenge by such ministers. What was she talking about? What I heard was calls for action to quash such behavior, which is not the same thing. This calls to mind the ethical stupidity in Steven Spielberg's movie Munich, written by the lunatic anti-Jew Tony Kushner, in which the Israelis hunt for the Munich Olympic Games massacre terrorists in order to exact revenge, when above all, it was an operation of preventive medicine. Having killed like this once, these terrorists would surely look for future opportunities to slaughter Israelis in Europe again, and it was necessary to take them down before that happened. But that's not what Zahava Galon, this hysterical anti-Jew Jewish herd. There was also the Commissioneress of Human Rights, Navi Pillay of India, who believes she can preach to us ethics. She, from a country where skin color oppression still exists, the caste system, largely a color system. She commented on the scores of rockets launched out of Gaza over the last few days and Israel's dozens of Air Force counterstrikes, saying, quote, "From a human rights point of view, I utterly condemn these rocket attacks, and more especially, I condemn Israel's excessive acts of retaliation." Unbelievable. In this topsy-turvy world, this commissioner of human rights more energetically scolds Israel for self-defense measures which specifically target individual enemies and specific sites whence the rockets are launched from, then she scolds Hamas and friends for launching these rockets at random into Jewish homes, streets, playgrounds, and neighborhoods. And as always, Israel is accused of excessive force. Force without restraint, wild force, too much force, beyond what is needed, a kind of vengeful, excessive, sadistic force that is wholly unnecessary. It's Israel that needs lessons in civilized restraint. With the beautiful biblical irony here that the enemy in this exchange of projectiles calls itself Hamas.
No!
And that was Psalm 126. Yeah, according to this Arutsheva report, a police source told Arutsheva that the family of the murdered boy has long been known to the police for its problems. And I would add, these Muslims are not beyond cooking up the kidnapping and the murder of this kid, who may have been a hated kid one way or another, to kill him and blame the Jews because of the unanimous sympathy the Jews garnered as the victims of Arab murderers. How intolerable for the Jews to be objects of pity and Arabs smeared with the guilt of kidnapping and murder. So you kidnap one of your own and frame the Jews. And perhaps one detail in the public news item hints at that possibility, the burning of the boy's body. Jews are forbidden to do that to any person's corpse, regardless of their life. Well, we shall see. And in the meantime, we have to cope with this latest round of missiles and mortars fired into Sderot and environs, making life there all day and yesterday impossible, with the Army and Air Force responding, as always, against specific buildings and individuals, which is the exact opposite activity from firing rockets at random. It was reported today that troops are being moved up to the security barrier, perhaps feigning an invasion, threatening another invasion, as in the past. And as usual, the MSM and politicians here continue to debate how to relate to what they continue to call, across the political and cultural spectrum, the Palestinians, when these Arabs see themselves as Muslims. Hamas is an Islamic term. Its rival gang in the Strip is called Islamic Jihad, with Israelis chronically deaf to these names and what they signify. And that's one reason why the violence goes on year in and year out with no change. I also think that the menace of the ISIS cultists in Iraq and Syria, who have just now declared a caliphate, and their charismatic leader, the new caliph, someone all Muslims must obey, could be a threat that's overblown. I mean, for sure, because the modern Iraqi and Assyrian identities were artificially created by the Brits and the French after World War I, those two regions are just reverting to their natural state, which is a pre-nationalist tribal state. I don't mean legal state, but condition. What ISIS seems to be is just another rival Muslim cult gang, another Sunni operation, a rival of Al-Qaeda, and of course of the Shiite Hezbollah group. It's all so reminiscent of the region 40 years ago when PLO gangs were sprouting like mushrooms after rain. In those days, inspired by Algeria's FLN in the 1950s, eight Muslim brothers led by Arafat created Fatah, a term as Islamic as Hamas, and in reaction, Nasser in Egypt invented the PLO, which Arafat later co-opted, as other murder cults inside the same Palestinian nationalist idiom sprang up, the PFLP and the DFLP and PLF and the PFLPGC, etc. Eventually some 18 organizations came under the umbrella of the PLO. Tribesmen. Today, though, with the Soviet Union defunct, kaput, and the dreamy language of nationalism and socialism a rotting corpse, the Middle East returns to its roots as a tribal culture, whose largest unit is not the nation or nation-state, but the Islamic Ummah, a nation of believers. The region returns to Islam as its one unifying, identifying ideology. On Monday, the New York Times reported how in Raqqa, Syria, a triumphant ISIS, quote, showed off what appeared to be a Scud missile and other heavy weapons, apparently looted from Iraqi military bases, close quote. Yeah, weapons looted from the enemy. Because weapons are not invented by Arabs, not by Muslims, but in this case, a weapon invented by the Soviets. Victory for these guys, as the news photos show daily, means tooling around in pickup trucks with some heavy gun bolted on the back. These are not rank-and-file soldiers, but closer to Bedouin brigands, roving for loot, and in this case, justified by Islam. According to a Jordanian expert on Islamist groups, the Times reported, quote, "It is clear that the first and second generation of what started as Al-Qaeda most of them supporting al-Zawahiri, but the new generation is more radical and closer to ISIS. While al-Qaeda remains committed to using terrorist tactics against the West and Arab governments, it's criticized ISIS for waging war against civilian Muslims. This rivalry has disrupted the jihadi landscape and what exactly an Islamic State is supposed to look like, close quote. Yes, indeedy, the new generation is always more radical than the old. Translation, the new generation wants to depose the old and comes up with some cockamamie accusation that the old guys are not radical enough. In other words, I'm not overly worried by these ISIS guys, for I doubt they have any more of what it takes to administer a society than that empty suit of a Muslim in the White House, Barack Obama, knows how to be president of the United States, more than Mohammed al-Morsi in Egypt knew during his 14 months. These Muslims think their passion for Islam is all they need to run a country when it is not. The only reason the world knows of a bin Laden or an al-Zawahiri or ISIS is their appetite for murder, mayhem, and looting, armed robbery. That's who Rashi said Ishmael became, an armed robber.
Yeah.
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Yeah, this ISIS phenomenon, I think, will turn out to be a flash in the pan. It's taken these guys Mosul in Iraq and is threatening Baghdad, but it's still also fighting in Syria, and not against the Assad regime so much as against rival Islamist cult gangs. The Syrian Human Rights Observatory reports that this year some 7,000 people have been killed in these intra-Islamist battles, which is what exactly the PLO gangs were up to in Lebanon in their heyday, fighting each other. In Algeria, too, in the 1950s, the Muslims killed 8 fellow Muslims for every European colonist they murdered. And today, J-Post reported that both Hezbollah and the National Army in Lebanon are both bracing for suicide attacks by ISIS agents. ISIS has already infiltrated the UN neighborhoods, still wickedly called refugee camps, when they are nothing of the kind. And then J-Post further reported that in Lebanon, there are the Abdullah Azam Brigades, another al-Qaeda offshoot, which has been mocking Hezbollah. Its spokesman on Tuesday dared Hezbollah to get involved in the fighting in Iraq. He said Hezbollah headman Nasrallah has called us, quote, agents of the Jews, but everyone knows about the arrest of dozens from the Mossad espionage network within Hezbollah's own ranks. Nasrallah, he said, has to stop lying that he is part of the resistance against the Jews when the Muslim nation knows that, in fact, he is protecting the Zionist border while Muslim children are being killed in his false resistance. You got that? This is how the Arabs curse each other and accuse each other of being spies for the Jews. Yeah, these Islamists are like a stunning fossil people, so like their distant ancestors. Last Sunday, according to a Reuters report, ISIS even crucified 8 of its own people. Did that on Saturday in Aleppo because these 8 were considered too moderate. These are guys who behead and machine gun people, like those Muslims with their hands tied behind their backs. These ISIS guys declared a caliphate last Saturday over the whole territory in Syria and Iraq that they currently rule over, and changed the name from ISIS to the Islamic Caliphate. The pronouncements of their leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, has now been proclaimed caliph, and a spokesman for the operation, Abu Muhammad al-Adnani, in an audio message makes the whole thing sound like Jim Jones in Guyana in 1978, remember, when he made all those people drink Kool-Aid. Al-Adnani, in his initial speech as spokesman, warned all ISIS men to remain loyal and united, and if any one of them decides to break away, his brothers should, quote, split his head with bullets and empty its insides, whoever he may be, close quote. I think Jim Jones did that. He had defectors murdered. A constant refrain in his remarks, al-Adnani's, was about the humiliation and disgrace that true Muslims experience at the hands of false Muslims and non-believers. He spoke of instituting the Quranically mandated jizya tax on non-believers. He trashed the ideas of, quote, secularism and democracy and nationalism and other garbage from the West, as he promised the faithful that they will own the earth and the West will submit to them. They will own the earth, yeah, loot it. Islam is an excuse for stealing everybody's wealth. And there is much more. This address reads like Mein Kampf. For its endless rant, the proclamation of the caliphate is a kind of one-party state analogous to the Soviet system. Islam is a totalitarian culture. So we don't foresee in the long term too much trouble from ISIS, precisely because they are so primitive in their thinking. Minds off the rails. For sure, they are savages, seen in their cruelty to their victims, but I doubt they have the right stuff for long-term rule. Sadiq katamar ifrach ka'erez balvanon izgen. Sadiq katamar ifrach ka'erez balvanon izgen.
שתולים בבית השם בחצרות אלוקינו יפריחו עוד ינובון בסיבה דשנים ורננים יהיו להגיד כי ישר השם צורי ולא אבלת הבוי נאי נא נא נאי נא נאי 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 צדיק כתמר יפרח כארז בלבנו נסגר צדיק כתמר יפרח כארז בלבנו נסגר שתולים בבית השם בחצרות אלוקינו יפריחו עוד ינובון בסבה שנים ורננים יהיו להגיד כי ישר השם צורי ולא אבלת הבוי נאי נא נא נאי נא נאי
And that's Psalm 92, verses 13, 14, 15, and 16. Well, as of this evening, the rockets and mortars out of Gaza have continued to fall, and Israel's response is yet unclear. I suspect there will be a replay of the major incursions in 2012 and 2008 and 9. So long, I fear, Israel cannot see through the menace of the West, which is forever demanding restraint. This is our fate, periodic major incursions to smash things up a bit and buy some peace for the people in Sderot and environs. What Israel needs to do, above all, I think, is break through this psychological barrier of European and American threats. And once and for all, whenever Catherine Ashton or John Kerry pipes up about the need for Israeli restraint, is to, figuratively speaking, flip them the bird and declare we will pound these people back into the Stone Age if we have to, if that's what it takes to put an end to their constant bouts of rocket and mortar barrages that torture and torment a million Jews, lots of them terrified children in the south. Israel has to demand total surrender in Gaza, and if Israel has to flatten everything in that strip, so be it. Enough of their anti-Semitic need to torture and torment the children of Israel, in both senses of the term. Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Me'eretz Yisrael.